Outrage in the U.S. after video is aired of the killing of Tyree Nichols by five police officers in Memphis. They're facing murder charges just 3 years after the killing of another black man, George Floyd, made headlines. What more can be done to reduce police violence in the U.S.? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Fuliba Thibault. A roadside stop by police in Memphis leads to a young black American man losing his life after a brutal beating by officers. Tyree Nichols' name is added to a long list of victims killed by those entrusted with enforcing the law and protecting the public. Condemnation has been led by U.S. President Joe Biden. It repeats widespread outrage over other incidents, such as the killing of George Floyd by police nearly 3 years ago. Why do such cases continue to reoccur? What can be done to stop them? And what role does racial diversity play in U.S. law enforcement? We'll be asking our guests these and other questions in just a few minutes. But first, Al Jazeera's Gabriel Elizondo reports from Memphis, Tennessee, on the killing of Tyree Nichols. A warning, his report includes images some viewers may find disturbing.
The images of Tyree Nichols, a young black man, being beaten to death by police. A day after that video released, people in Memphis still trying to grasp what they witnessed. One man told me he was shocked by the police violence.
One police officer was holding Tyree while the other one was swinging through. It looked like a scene from a movie. The way he was punching through his face, and then he turned around and he did it the other way. Then he's being held and he's about to fall, and they lifted him back up to take more licks.
In one part of the video, Nichols is in pain. None of the police officers or paramedics appeared to provide help. That left Ron Simmons angry.
It was the constant beating. And then you had the fireman that was just out there. You were supposed to help. The man was laying there to die for. No one did their job. You beat him to death. You beat that man, that innocent young boy.
Here in Memphis, there are still some people that have yet to watch the video. But even for many of them, the beating death of Tyree Nichols has left them deeply affected.
I intend on watching it at some point, I think. But this past day or two, I've been sort of bracing myself for it. It's unacceptable. I really, really hope that justice is served and that people understand that this sort of thing is not a freak incident. It doesn't happen rarely. This is America at this point, and we got to do better.
Tyree Nichols is now dead, and the residents of this city where it happened now seeing his death up close and asking why. Gabriel Elizondo, Al Jazeera, Memphis.
Well, Tyree Nichols is the latest black American to die at the hands of police. Some officers have been jailed. Others haven't faced charges. George Floyd died in 2020 after being choked by a police officer kneeling on his neck. His death sparked nationwide protests and calls for reforms. The same year, Breonna Taylor was shot dead by police who stormed her apartment using a so-called no-knock warrant. In 2014, Eric Garner was choked to death by officers. His killing was caught on camera. And in 1991, Rodney King was severely beaten by four Los Angeles police officers. Film of the incident led to 5 days of unrest. But these are just a few among many incidents of police brutality and excessive use of force. In 2022, nearly 1,200 people were killed by officers in the U.S., the highest annual number on record. Black Americans are disproportionately at risk. Studies show they're nearly three times more likely to be killed by police than white Americans. Well, let's bring in our guest now for today's show. In Baltimore is Debbie Hines, former Assistant Attorney General for Maryland. In New Jersey is Zeli Imani, a Black Lives Matter activist and co-founder of Black Liberation Collective. And in New York, Alexis Hoge-Forger, co-director for the Center for Criminal Justice at Brooklyn Law School. Thank you all for being on Inside Story. We appreciate your time. Before we delve into the issues at hand here, I want to ask you, each one of you, your reaction first after seeing and watching the video of Tyree Nichols' death and beating by police. Zeli, let me start with you. What was it that shocked you most about this video?
I'm probably one of the many Black people in America who have not watched the video. All my life, I've been watching videos and seeing images of Black people brutalized or killed by police officers and vigilantes. And all that trauma has been like living in my body. And over the past few years, I just can't take, you know, seeing those images anymore, because not only am I seeing Black people being killed by police officers, I'm also seeing Black people not getting justice for their brutal murders. So those images and those videos don't do anything to motivate me. Mm. I don't need any more motivation to know that Black people deserve justice and Black people deserve to live.
Right.
And I shouldn't have videos stir me to action.
Zeli, one of the complexities of this case is the fact that it was five Black officers who were seen beating Tyree Nichols and who've been charged with murder. How much does that add to the anguish?
It doesn't add to the anguish for myself. What it does is add to the argument that the police is a racist institution and that it doesn't matter if you have more diverse police officers. A Black fist hurts no less than a white fist, right? That a Black foot doesn't hurt any more or less than a white foot. That police officers are a violent institution and they're going to be violent whether they're Black or white. And these are the things that we have to address in America.
Debbie in Baltimore, let me come to you. What was it that shocked you most about this video? What was your initial reaction to it?
So there's not one word that I can use to describe the video. I did watch all four tapes that were released of the video. I did not want to watch it, but I was called to watch it and to comment on it. So to say it was horrifying is not enough. To say it was disgusting is not enough. To say it was egregious is not enough. There's no words to describe it. So I like to always describe things more in a picture format and what it really looked like if you were watching a movie. But this was a real life. This was the life of a young man. It looked like that there were five wolves that were attacking an animal. That is how vicious this brutal beating was. But in reality, these were individuals who were attacking another individual, another human being. And so what the video showed is man's inhumanity to man. It showed police brutality against a young Black man, having no regard, not even seeing him as a human being, because to see him as a human being, you would not have had five police officers kicking him,
right,
beating him, hitting him with batons in the head, and then afterwards, and one officer had kicked him so much on the video that officer was walking around limping after he had finished kicking him. The other officers that were just stomping him in the head, at the end of it, they just propped him up on a car as if he was a rag doll, a piece of trash. There is no way to describe how I felt. I am still outraged, if that's the word you want to use. I am outraged,
right,
by what I saw.
Okay. Alexis, in New York, what did you make of what you saw? Of course, the video, shocking beyond words, has left so many unanswered questions, including why the cops used such force on Tyree Nichols, who didn't appear to be fighting back, why they felt compelled to confront him twice, why they didn't help him even when he was lying down. What was it that outraged you the most when you saw this video?
Like Zeli, I did not want to watch the video. We have all been inundated with these videos. And what they communicate to us is a real devaluation of Black life. And again, it does not matter at whose hands it's from. And so here we had five Black officers. My first thought in watching the video was the pain and anguish unimaginable that Mr. Nichols' family is going through, his loved ones. He was a son, he was a brother, he was a father. And it's not just that this video exists, it's a human being and it's their son, it's their brother, and it's their father who was on that film. So my heart does go out to them. Mm-hmm. I teach criminal procedure adjudication to about 100 students at Brooklyn Law School. And we have had several conversations at my institution about the need to provide information and support for our students. Many of my students intend to go into the criminal adjudication system. They want to provide and reform the system. I teach another course in abolition. These are students that want to know the tools and the skills on how to decrease the footprint of the carceral system, how to decrease the footprint of the law enforcement system. And so I watched the video to be a resource and a support for my students,
right,
who are going to be the actors to shrink this adjudication system, to shrink this law enforcement system.
Zeli, you talked about trauma earlier. Talk to us about the trauma in the Black community in America when it comes to police. In the specific instance of Tyree Nichols, he was allegedly stopped for a traffic violation. What could have gone differently here? Right. A lot of people, especially overseas, asking why he ran from the police. What goes through a person's mind in a situation like this when they're stopped by police, a Black man in America?
There's so much trauma that goes into these police interactions. Even myself as a Black person living in America, and I'm sure many Black people have the same experience, that when we are driving our cars and we see police with their flashing lights behind us, even if the cops aren't, you know, about to pull us over, our hearts are racing, right? Even if we have our IDs, even if we have our registration and our insurance, we're still scared. Even if we know we're doing a speed limit or didn't, you know, go through any stop lines, like, we had that moment of pause because we don't know if the police officer is going to pull us over. We don't know what's going to happen if the police officer does pull us over. Are they going to think that we are dangerous, suspicious? Mm-hmm. Are they going to say that we are reaching for a gun? So at a very early age, even before we even learned how to drive, our parents are teaching us what to do when we get pulled over by police officers. And these things are the histories and experiences of Black people in America, that our experiences with police are not always the same as white people's experience with police, that we are seeing these images, mm-hmm, of police brutality. So again, imagine that my students who are 10 years old, they've been alive, or they was born before Trayvon Martin was killed.
Right.
So throughout their whole life, all they have been seeing is Trayvon Martin and Mike Brown and Eric Garner and all these things happening to Black people and Black people not getting justice. That does something to an individual.
The list goes on and on indeed. Debbie, the five Memphis officers involved in this incident were charged with second-degree murder, and they were charged, it would seem, much faster than police have been in past police killings. Why is that?
Why is that? It's because that's the way it should have happened in all the other police cases, right, where Black individuals were killed. It's not like this. This is the aberration.
Why do you think it didn't happen in the other cases?
It didn't happen in the other cases because it's partly a racist system. I mean, I'm going to be quite honest about that. I'm a former prosecutor. Mm-hmm. So I worked day in and day out for 5 years with police officers. And so there's no reason that police officers should be held to a higher standard than any other person on this panel, any other person in America. But indeed, they are. And there has always been more than just enough to bring charges, because to bring charges is a very basic standard. It is just to bring charges that the word is probable cause. And what that means is, if you're looking at it and you're just looking at it solely from the position of the prosecutor, is there enough to bring criminal charges in the case? And we know there's two sides to a case, but that's the criteria for actually bringing charges. And in all the cases that we've seen, that we've mentioned, and the countless other ones, there has been, in most cases, probable cause where you have a black person who is doing absolutely nothing, who is in their bed asleep at night, and they end up being killed. You've never had any of these charges. A lot of these cases have not been charged, but I would think that most of them should have been charged, mm-hmm. because most people have not had a weapon, they've not had a gun, they've not been doing anything threatening where the police officer, although the officers always claim that they were in fear for their lives, that's the buzzword that they use. But in this case, what I'm trying to say is justice was done initially. We don't have full justice or accountability, but this is the aberration. But as Ben Crump, the lawyer for the family, said, this is the blueprint going forward of how it should happen going forward. Mm-hmm. And I say how it should have happened in the past.
Alexis, your thoughts about this? Is this going to be the blueprint, as Debbie says, going forward? Because there were talks, of course, of reforms after the death of George Floyd, reforming the police system, making sure that there was more diversity within the police force. But none of that has happened. Why? Why are we seeing these cases and incidents of police brutality against Black Americans happening on and on and on again without any changes?
Sure. And I think a major difference that we have in Mr. Nichols' death and the response from local officials is that since George Floyd's murder in 2020, there has been, as we have all witnessed, massive public protest, massive public demonstrations. Obviously, that was happening right in Minnesota. That was happening all over this country and all over the world. And I think part of this new blueprint that Ben Crump is mentioning is directly impacted by the fact that you have massive public engagement. Mm-hmm. I started my practice as a federal defender in Tennessee. Most of my work was focused in Memphis, in Shelby County. And what this community has experienced within the last year is a drastic sea change in elected officials. And principally, it's Steve Mulroy, who is the new district attorney general of that community. And he ran on a platform of criminal justice reform. His predecessor, Amy Weirich, I highly doubt that she would have quickly responded to this event with criminal charges against law enforcement officials. And she was elected out of office. And so you have an engaged public in Memphis. This is a community that is majority Black. This is a community that demanded to have accountability and transparency. This is a police department that has been under federal court monitoring since the 1970s, mm-hmm. late 1970s. You have a brand new police chief, the first Black female police chief, CJ Davis. These are individuals that are being held to account by the public. And without massive public demonstrations, which is what's been happening in Memphis for years, local organizers demanding that there be accountability. And so that's the sea change that you're experiencing in this community. It's not necessarily that something has changed among the prosecutor's office or the policies that they institute. It's that you have the public.
But Alexis, do you find that, you mentioned the case of Tennessee there, do you find that diversity makes a difference in policing?
Not necessarily, and we see why. With Nichols, Mr. Nichols' brutal murder at the hands of five Black police officers. Baltimore is a city, I know Debbie knows this intimately, that's got a lot of Black leadership, critical mass of Black law enforcement officials. And I want to return to something Zelly said, is that this idea of the institution of policing is about subordination, violence, control, regardless of the race of the individual officers. Our Constitution allows law enforcement officials to use lethal force. And again, it does not matter what race the police officers are. This unit in the Memphis Police Department, the Scorpion Unit.
Yeah, which has been disbanded now. Yeah.
Exactly. Their entire purpose was to patrol in unmarked cars. These police officers were not in uniform. They're wearing Black hoodies. They had scorpion seals on their unmarked cars, and they pulled over drivers for minor traffic violations, mm-hmm. and then escalated those stops, some demonstration of probable cause,
right.
to then figure out if there were other crimes occurring. And that was their whole purpose. And we see the way that played out with Mr. Nichols, mm-hmm. who was engaged in no unlawful offense.
All right, Lizelli, let me come to you, and I will come back to you in a second, Debbie, to find out more about this issue of diversity and whether or not it helps. But Zelli, as Alexis talked about there, this seems to be like a systemic issue that can't be solved mm-hmm. with a quick fix. What do you see as the solutions, whether short or long term, to end police brutality in America?
Yeah, I think that the only way that police violence will no longer exist in America is if police doesn't exist anymore in America, that we have to continue to push this idea of defunding the police and the abolition of the police, and the realization that the safest communities in America don't have more police officers. Mm-hmm. They have access to better resources. Mm-hmm. They have access to better jobs, access to better housing, access to better education, access to better recreation for the kids. And these are the things that make safer and strong communities. So when you say to our communities, you want to make it safer, why then do you give it more police officers instead of more resources? If you want to make our community safer, you should give them more resources, better schools, so that our kids can be reading at a greater appropriate level, more better housing, so our families don't live in crumbling, roach-infested housing. These are the things that's going to make us safer. And these are the things that's actually going to decrease our proximity to police. And when we decrease our proximity to police, we decrease the chances of experiencing police violence.
Debbie, you're a former Baltimore City prosecutor. Zelli says that defunding the police is a solution. If police are not the solution to crime, then what is it? Do you agree with him that defunding should be a priority?
I think what should be a priority is dealing with the problem with the police, and that is systemic racism that has been going on for generations and generations and generations, going all the way back to when Black people were enslaved and there were the policing patrols to go after Black people. And it's that legacy in America that has continued until today. First off, they can get rid of all of the white supremacists that are in many of the police departments across the U.S. That is something that can be done just immediately at the drop of a hat. And then in terms of the culture of police, I mean, the racist culture of police is what happens throughout. In the Freddie Gray case, which was the young man that was killed in Baltimore in 2015, that got a lot of notoriety. The police officers involved in that case were both Black and white police officers. None of them were found guilty. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't matter, in my opinion, about racial diversity, because what happens within the culture of police officers is that it's like a club. It's like a boys and girls club. It's like a fraternity or a sorority, and everybody wants to fit in. So the Black officers, the Asian officers, as was in the George Floyd case, they just adopt all the white racist attitudes. I don't fully believe in defunding the police, but I do believe that there should be a more holistic approach, that many of the things that the police departments are engaged in doing, such as these pretextual stops, which means traffic stops where the person really hasn't done anything illegal. They may not have a missing taillight, they may not have a sticker, it may be something really very minor, but they're not being stopped for drunk driving or reckless driving. In the majority of those cases, most Black people end up being disproportionately killed. And that doesn't happen for white people. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, Black people are less likely in these stops, less likely to have any illegal contraband, substances, or guns. White people are more likely. That just supports the fact that the police do not need to even be engaging in those particular stops. And there's a whole list of activities that the police do not need to engage in too long to get into in this segment right now. So I don't believe in totally defunding them, but I believe that a lot of the activities that the police are engaged in, a lot of the calls that they make, they don't need to even be making them. We need a more of a holistic mm-hmm. approach. And just using Baltimore as an example, there's $300 million that's mm-hmm. used to jail Black citizens in the city of Baltimore. If we just use just any portion, any percentage of that, to put that back into the community, that was what will make us safer. It does not make the Black community safer by having police patrolling it day and night and basically antagonizing Black people. Right. And in terms of the system here, the one thing I do want to make clear is, as a former prosecutor, as a Black woman, during the pandemic, I was sitting in my car drinking a cup of coffee, mm-hmm. and a police officer pulled up behind me with flashing lights. And you cannot imagine how my heart must have been palpitating back and forth, and I knew I wasn't doing anything. Mm-hmm. And it ended up at the end of the day, he just went around me. I was evidently blocking a part of a parking lot, but I should not have that fear. Mm-hmm. That something could happen to me for drinking a cup of coffee because a police officer pulled up with flashing lights. And that is Black America. Mm.
Thank you for sharing that experience with us. Alexis, let me come to you. Debbie believes that defunding the police is not the solution, that racial diversity in the police force doesn't really matter. Where do you stand on these issues, and how do we solve this problem of police brutality, racial brutality in America, long-term and short-term?
Yes. Yeah, so even though Debbie doesn't necessarily wholly support defunding the police, what I did hear from her is that she believes in justice reinvestment, which is this idea of taking funds away from the carceral system. What I heard her say is to take money away from the imprisonment of Black Baltimoreans and to reinvest it in other resources that would be more life affirming, that would actually support Black life. And I think one of the issues with police in this country is our heavy reliance on police to fill all sorts of social service reasons and all sorts of occurrences that we don't necessarily need police for. We don't need police to carry out suspected traffic violations. We don't need police to report to wellness checks. We don't need police to show up when there's someone having a mental health crisis. And so part of fixing the policing problem in this country is decreasing our reliance on policing. And when we decrease our reliance on policing, we don't need to fund them to the same extent. Police do not go around preventing crime. They are often responding to crime, or in the instance of Mr. Nichols' case, they're engaged in pretextual stops, which Debbie had already explained. This idea that people are not engaging in necessarily unlawful behavior or it's minor behavior. I imagine all of us on the panel who drive a car have engaged in a minor traffic violation, and it doesn't need to result in a death sentence. And so what you had here was a deputized band of law enforcement officials who had the sort of green light from the department to go around and essentially harass motorists to shake them down to see if they had engaged in other acts. Right. And, you know, what's ironic about this Scorpion unit, which again has been disbanded, is that the mayor of Memphis, Mayor Strickland, was touting their performance and their success just a few months after they were originated, which was in late October 2021. So here we are still in the pandemic. And in early 2022, you had Strickland say they have arrested over 560 individuals. I don't know how many of those arrests actually resulted in criminal charges being filed and actually resulted in some sort of conviction. And so what that communicates to me is that you had this group of individuals that were driving around in unmarked cars, essentially harassing Memphians, harassing people engaged in simply driving in the streets of Memphis.
We will leave it there. Thank you so much for a very important and interesting conversation. Thank you, Zeli Imani, Alexis Hogg, Forger, and Debbie Hines. Thank you very much for taking part in this discussion. And thank you as well for watching. You can always watch this program again anytime by visiting our website at aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And of course, you can join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is at AJInsideStory. From me, Fuli Batibo, and the whole team here in Doha, thanks for watching. Bye for now.